Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Thank you very much for the invitation here, for having us here. So we've split the presentation. I'll start and then my colleague Chantal will do the second part, more focusing on the ICC. And I'll start a little bit with the civil society organizations when it comes to criminal complaints, to Article 15 communications in this process, which was partly also covered in the previous book on quality control, on fact finding. And it goes also then beyond today's topic and into investigations, which would be, as I understand correctly, also the topic of another round of conferences and publications. So, but with regard to preliminary examinations, and I will also then add a short perspective on Germany and the national prosecutions. I think first it's clear that civil society organizations are really a heterogeneous group. So you find a civil society organization almost for everything. So it's difficult to talk in general on civil society. Also to add, if we talk of too many partners in worldwide, from the Philippines, India, to Argentina or Colombia, on international justice issues, these are always really enriching discussions with many different voices shared, and which also shows the big variety of civil society organizations. Having said that, it's also a topic that many of those, especially in these countries, are also facing a lot of repression for the work they're doing. Which should also not be forgotten in this context and under which conditions many civil society organizations have to work. So what we understand, especially also at the European Center for Constitution and Human Rights, is the civil society groups or this particular NGO as being in the center of a number of topics, activities which concern international criminal justice and also preliminary examinations. So it's on the one hand the legal expertise of lawyers in the organization on international criminal law, but also especially on the procedural issues of the ICC, but also of many national jurisdictions in which we litigate. So that's one important factor to have a good legal advice on that, or being a lawyer and litigator ourselves. Then what we also can do as civil society organization is some form of documentation, investigation, not only crime-based, but particularly also on structures of command structures and analysis on responsibilities beyond the direct perpetrators of a crime, but more on higher levels, which usually from a victim's perspective is much more difficult to do, and often in human rights documentation that's the link which is lacking because it's more crime-based and focused. On the other hand, civil society organizations organize victim support at stages because presenting cases we deal a lot with victims. And the other major part, and I'll say a few words on that, is also especially the strategies. And the strategies on two levels. The first level, which situation in the ICC language civil society puts its resources on. So do we look into whatever Central African Republic case or the Philippines or in terms of international criminal justice on what's going on in Russia or Colombia. So that's certainly a discussion for civil society organizations where to start. And if you go into a situation, also the selection there, and that's often something done then with local civil society organizations. As in the example of Germany, we did intensively over the last year with groups from Syria, different groups, different lawyers, where we discussed international criminal justice in the Syrian context, litigation options, strategies, came to the certain conclusions, leading to first criminal complaints presented to the German federal public prosecutor, particularly focused on detention and torture by the Syrian regime. In two detention centers with a lot of crime-based and linkage evidence, which we developed over the year, but certainly also then moving on to other jurisdictions and other kind of crimes in the coming months and years. So that's one part where civil society plays this central role in developing cases, strategic output, and then presenting them. On the other hand, also on the public sphere, civil society can support cases, can support prosecutors, the ICC, but also have own demands, of course, towards these organizations, so can also be critical, constructive force in accompanying casework and giving political support, but also giving well-founded criticism of some decisions taking. So maybe briefly with regard to Germany, and especially here, there's a strategic part I mentioned already with regard to Syria, and of course it also applies to many other situations. There's also the part on the analysis, for example, dossiers on high-level suspects, which can then be submitted to prosecution service. And in Germany, as Matthias Neuner also presented yesterday already, there is the a monitoring procedure, it is called, which is kind of a preliminary examination, which doesn't include any investigative steps, but which is a file number under which information is collected, open source or submissions. So that's information where, for example, last week we put in some information on the new CIA deputy director for her involvement in the 2002 torture case in the secret site in Thailand, with the purpose that if there's more evidence coming up or more links to Germany, for example, in terms of victims and witnesses of a situation living in Germany, which could give a prosecutor the discretion to open a structural investigation to collect evidence, or in case a suspect travels to Germany, that the prosecution service doesn't start from zero, but has already some documents, analysis to analyze and to start any form of so-called structural investigation, which is not against individual perpetrators, but on a situation, but with investigative means, or going into formal investigations against either on a particular case or against a known perpetrator or suspect. That's the other option. Another purpose is in case of investigations in other countries that the German prosecutor is also in a position to share information and evidence in case of mutual legal assistance requests by states or international courts, and in securing evidence in terms that the monitoring phase moves on to the structural investigation phase. But especially in the monitoring phase here, NGOs and civil society can feed in information to give the prosecutor. And the war crimes unit in Germany usually is only composed of 4 or 5 prosecutors at the moment, mostly focusing on Syria, some background on other conflict situations, and potential travel of suspects. It was also mentioned already yesterday in terms of quality control of the German preliminary examination or monitoring procedure, and also following this discussion this morning on the investigating judge in France, for example. In Germany, you have the federal public prosecutor, who's under the Ministry of Justice. So, in theory, and the prosecutor always denies that this happens, but there's a form of political oversight by the Ministry of Justice over the actions of the federal public prosecutor. In investigations and also in monitoring procedures, so you can either argue that's a form of quality control because the prosecutor is under quality control of the Ministry of Justice. We would rather argue it's also a form of exercising political control, which is then again different to the model of the investigating judge and probably a bit more problematic from our point of view. At the same time, there's only limited judicial review possible in decisions taking in this phase, also already partly addressed yesterday by Matthias. So there's, for example, one case which is currently pending before the European Court of Human Rights. It's a war crimes case where the German army was involved, where the case was closed and judicial review wasn't fully possible in Germany. So the European Court of Human Rights accepted the case and partly will potentially also look into the conduct of the prosecutor. So to close here, that's a form of quality control with the European Court of Human Rights in this context, because judicial review in Germany is only limited and partly only exercised by the Ministry of Justice. So in terms of preliminary examinations and the national procedure, there's also quite some room to improvement and a lot of discretion given to the prosecutor. And I will hand over to my colleague.
Telling me that I only have 5 minutes. Now, this is going to be hard, but I'll try to rush and see what's possible. I would like to start with a preliminary observation. It is a factual observation, and this is that is much more difficult to have an investigation open at the ICC in the absence of a referral, either by a state or by the Security Council. So this is what is shown by the practice of the Office of the Prosecutor in the last years. Although undoubtedly the presence of a referral, either by a state or by the Security Council, doesn't automatically imply the opening of an investigation. And of course, the prosecutor has clarified from the outset that the office preliminary examination activities will be conducted in the same manner, irrespective of whether the office receives a referral from a state party or by the Security Council, or acts on the basis of information of crimes obtained pursuant to Article 15. So thus, in theory, the pattern of analysis is the same in a preliminary examination, regardless of the source of the information received. If one takes a look at the various situations currently under investigation, it is apparent that most of these are in fact opened up upon referral, either by the UN Security Council, Sudan and Libya, or by the state, Uganda, DRC, Central African Republic and Mali, or at least with a more or less a tacit agreement of the state involved. For instance, I am thinking of the ad hoc acceptance of the court jurisdictions ex Article 12.3 of the Ivory Coast, or a more or less a tacit process of agreement by the state, which we could, for instance, see at the beginning in the Kenya proceedings, where the former prosecutor had engaged in a long exercise of positive complementarity. Thus, it appears that what I would call as pure proprio motu investigations are very rare in The Hague. Of course, now I cannot speculate in depth on what are the possible reasons of this. Leaving aside possible political reasons, one explanation could be that proprio motu procedure are more complex because they require, of course, an authorization of the pretrial chamber. But again, every time the authorization was asked, to the best of my knowledge, it was granted to the prosecutor so far. So maybe this is not the reason. Another possibility would be to consider the normative framework, as Matthew Cross already explained this morning in his excellent presentation. There is a difference in the way the statute deals with preliminary examinations, whereas they are depending on whether they are triggered by a state or Security Council referral or proprio motu, because the normative framework is different, Article 53.3 in one case and 15.3 in the other case. So why this observation? All this is to point at the difficult role of civil society organizations, which normally represent victims in this stage, through communications submitting to the office of the prosecutor. And civil society organizations are the typical source of the information that the prosecutor uses to act proprio motu, and then these same organizations have, of course, a special interest in seeing the preliminary examination becoming an investigation, and also they are possibly the best actors and stakeholders that can exert a first quality control on the preliminary examination stage, also because they represent the very same victims that have a personal interest and they have experienced the alleged crimes committed that were brought to the attention of the prosecutor. So, of course, the question is, what are the tools to participate, influence, possibly counterbalance the broad discretion that rightly has been given to the prosecutor in this early phase of the proceedings? And of course, this also means that civil society organizations have a responsibility, and this was well said by Mathilde and Amy, who spoke on behalf of the Office of the Prosecutor yesterday, because the quality of the submissions that have to be brought to the Office of the Prosecutor has to be high in order to have a successful quality preliminary examination by the office. So here I think I will just summarize briefly what you can read because we extensively analyzed it in our paper. The various possibilities for civil society organization to participate in this early stage of the proceedings. And whereas on the one hand, as I said, the role of civil society organization is so important in this phase of the proceedings, on the other hand, we can notice that the possibility to participate before the investigation has started are very limited. Of course, there is a possibility to submit communications, to participate at the stage of authorization to open an investigation, intervention during judicial review, but, and here I just focus on this, so to flag possibly the biggest problem, in my view, with regard to the role of civil society organizations in this early phase of the proceedings, which is the gap that we can observe in the ICC-designed system of preliminary examinations with regard to the tools that victims and civil society organizations have at disposal to defend their legitimate interest when the prosecutor decides not to open an investigation, in particular when he's acting proprio motu, because as the statute teaches us, the only possibility for a judicial review of a decision not to open an investigation is when there is a state referral or a Security Council referral, then they can trigger the pretrial chamber judicial review. But if the decision of the prosecutor is taken only on the basis of the interest of justice, then the pretrial chamber can act proprio motu. But otherwise, there are no procedures in place, apparently, in the paper we creatively, give me 1 minute, Hector, because just to creatively use some of the tools, including in Article 68 of the statute, for victims and civil society to have their voices heard. But possibly even worse than this is the situation where the Office of the Prosecutor does, in fact, not take any decision whether to open an investigation or not. And this can be for many years, as we see in the situation of Colombia. So where over a decade of preliminary examination is left with no possibility for civil society organization or victims to really ask for judicial review of something that, in fact, is not a decision. So here, I just conclude on this and the arguments, you can read them in the paper, but I would submit that even if there is no time limit in the statute system, and of course the OTP is not obliged to indicate a time limit, the fact that there are preliminary examinations like the Colombian one that are not at the stage of the investigation, and thus the prosecutor is left with no real power to investigate, is detrimental to the very goal and scope of the ICC in terms of achieving justice, because there are in this situation there are no possibilities for the office of the prosecutor to really get the needed information in order to make a decision whether the reasonable basis for the crime and thus to open an investigation is there or not. And I'm concluding here, and maybe on the debate we can discuss a little bit. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.